Now, friends, we're coming to a most unusual section in the book of Deuteronomy. In chapter 17 and 18, we have here a section that deals with regulations that would control a king, a priest, and a prophet. And this has to do with the office of all three, the office of king, the office of a priest, and the office of a prophet. These were the three main offices in the nation Israel, in the theocracy that God had set up for these people. Now, will you notice, as we begin verse 1 in chapter 17, "Thou shalt not sacrifice unto the Lord thy God any bullock or sheep wherein is blemish, or any evil favoredness, for that is an abomination unto the Lord thy God." Now, friends, this almost touches a great many folk today who give God their secondhand clothes. We send it to the mission or to the missionaries. Or we give God that which is left over. We don't give him the best. Now, God says that the firstborn of every creature belonged to him, and everything presented to him, every offering, was without spot or blemish. You will find that in Malachi, one of the charges God made against his people that brought down judgment, and in fact, it was number one in the list of charges, was that they were offering to God a sick cow, a sick animal. For instance, they have a very fine young bullock, and the man has decided to keep that bullock. But one morning he gets up, goes out to his barn lot, and there's this animal sick. So he says to his boys, "Hustle up, boys, we'll put it in the truck, rush it off over to the temple, and we'll offer this prize bullock to the Lord." And the neighbors would say, "My, look at Mr. So-and-so. Isn't he generous? He's giving God that prize bullock." God says, "I don't want it." God says, "I don't accept it." And God says that that is absolutely meaningless. You know, a great many of us believers, the way we do business with God, we'd be arrested and put in a penitentiary if we did business in the business world with other individuals like that today. That is a place where many of us could check up ourselves. How honest are we with God in financial matters? Now, don't misunderstand. God says he's not poor. He's not asking for anything. He says the cattle on 1,000 hills are mine. I don't want your old sick cow. And he says that the gold and silver is mine. You couldn't give God anything, friends. But you know, he permits us to do this. Why? For the blessing to our own soul. And it doesn't bless us when we are beggarly and stingy with God. This is very important, you see. Now, verse 2, he's talking here now about idolatry among the people. These are laws in this chapter that pertain to different areas of their common culture of that day. Notice this, "If there be among you, within any of thy gates, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, man or woman that hath wrought wickedness in the sight of the Lord thy God, in transgressing his covenant, and hath gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have not commanded, and it be told thee, and thou hast heard of it, and inquired diligently, and behold, it be true, and the thing certain, that which abomination is wrought in Israel, then shalt thou bring forth that man or that woman which hath committed that wicked thing unto thy gates, even that man or that woman, and shall stone them with stones till they die." Now, this was an absolute law against idolatry. You say, what was the penalty for breaking the Ten Commandments? As we've called attention to this before, the penalty for breaking any one of the commandments was stoning to death. For some reason, God was not very enlightened with the enlightenment of this generation, we are so generous and we are so loving and we're so civilized today, we've gotten rid of the death penalty. But the very interesting thing is we have the most lawless society that the world has ever seen. Sometimes makes you wonder if maybe God wasn't right after all. If you want to know the truth, I think he was right. And this was the penalty. Now you'll notice those that worship the sun, moon, or the host of heaven. If you look into Greek mythology and the idolatry of the Orient, you will find out that many of the gods and goddesses are associated with the sun, moon, and stars. That was common among the Greeks. As you know, we identified Diana was the goddess of the moon, for instance. And we find Apollo the sun, and so on and so on. As God put it, they worship the creature rather than the creator. Where did that begin? I personally think it began at the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel actually was a rallying place for those against God. And they were against God now. Why? Well, he'd sent a flood. And now they're going to worship the sun. Sun, according to them, never sent a flood. The very interesting thing is they didn't know that it was the sun that drew the water up that sent the rain and moved the clouds across the sky. But you see, in idolatry and the science of that day wasn't very accurate. And maybe the science of our day doesn't have the final word. A great many people today feel like man's wisdom and knowledge is accurate. Now, they were quite inaccurate in that day. So they turned to worship the sun and the moon and the stars. They seemed to be friendly, and they worshiped them rather than the Creator who made them. And this is God's condemnation. It's breaking the first and second commandments. Now, will you notice, verse 6, at the mouth of two witnesses, or three witnesses, shall he that is worthy of death be put to death, but at the mouth of one witness he shall not be put to death. Now, I want you to notice this, because this is very important also. It wasn't arbitrary. In other words, a man couldn't rush in, and he had it in for his neighbor, and then say, this man, I saw him worshiping the sun god, or Ashtaroth, the Babylonian god, or Ishtar, or Aphrodite, or Venus, or any of these. That wasn't any good. There had to be two or more witnesses. It took that to condemn the man, you see. Now today, one witness can send a man to the gas chamber or the electric chair. I personally do not think that that should be permitted. I feel like that you need more than one witness in any case. And here, God always said there had to be two or more witnesses. You see, God's not arbitrary. He was being very fair in his dealings. Now here, they were to always refer everything to the priests. Why? Well, because this was the theocracy, and they should never have had a king. They'll ask for one later on, as you well know, and God will give it to them. You know, he granted their requests, it was said of those in the wilderness, but he sent leanness to their souls. You know, if God answered many of our prayers like we pray them, it'd be the biggest mistake in the world. And God's very gracious, and he says no to us many times. He does that to me, and I'm sure he does it to you. Now, notice verse 8. If there arise a matter too hard for thee in judgment, between blood and blood, between plea and plea, between stroke and stroke, being matters of controversy within thy gates, in other words, if two men disagree on an important matter, how is it to be solved when the evidence seems to be equally impressive on both sides? Then shalt thou arise and get thee up into the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt come unto the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge that shall be in those days, and inquire, and they shall show thee the sentence of judgment. Now, that was that which was to be. Thou shalt do according to the sentence which they of that place which the Lord shall choose. So that this was the way God was to control, and this is the way they were to obey. Now, the law did not cover everything. Very frankly, the only instance I know where it's recorded that this was used, and I'm sure it was used many times, is over in the little prophecy of Haggai. And there, Haggai 2:11, thus saith the Lord of hosts, ask now the priests concerning a law. And it was concerning something that was not specifically and definitely and dogmatically given in the Mosaic law. And it didn't cover everything. Therefore, in these cases, they were to appeal to the priests and the judge that was in that day, and they were to hand down the decision concerning the matter. This is very important, by the way, as you can see. Now we come in verse 14 to these regulations that concerned a king. And then we'll see in chapter 18 those that concerned a priest, and then those that concerned a prophet. Now God gave, and I'll just lift out just certain things that concern the king. Verse 16, you have given here three things that the king was not to do. And you know what? Well, let's read them and we'll see. First, but he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to the end that he should multiply horses. Forasmuch as the Lord hath said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Now, this man Solomon multiplied horses. I was at Megiddo. And the thing that impressed me at Megiddo is not so much the Battle of Armageddon. The thing that is there, the ruins of the stables of Solomon. And those were just one stable, by the way. I think the stables of Solomon would have made any racetrack in this country today look like a tenant farmer's barn in Georgia. I'm confident that this man Solomon went all out in this direction. And this is the reason God warned them of it. Because in multiplying horses, Egypt was the place in that day that really raised horses. You remember that even today there's a breed of horse, I understand, called the Egyptian. And he's a very fine horse. Now, the second thing the king was not to do, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Well, who did that? Well, Solomon went all out in this direction also, and it was his wives that turned him away from God. You see, the Lord, here at the very beginning, puts up the road warning sign, don't go down this way, be careful. And then the third thing, here in verse 17 that's mentioned, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And actually, Solomon cornered the silver and gold market of his day. David had begun that. David was collecting it, of course, to build the temple. But this is God's warning against that, which was the undoing of Solomon and finally brought the division of the kingdom and ultimately the captivity of both the northern and the southern kingdoms.